This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I am Freddie Bell, and welcome to the show. We have a big program lined up for you this week. We talk with Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's an epidemiologist who has been a regular on our show from time to time. He's talking about Omicron and the current variant and what we can do to stay safe, and he gives us some trends that we're seeing from around the world. Also, we'll tell you about Hillary Clinton and her bout with COVID-19. Joe McKenzie stops by. He talks about career and what we can do to really get ready and have the best career possible. We have some lighthearted moments in the show as well for you this week, and we introduce Cassie Crandall, and we can't wait to hear what Cassie has to say. All this and more, plus this week's Words to the Wise, all waiting for you as New Beginnings kicks off right now. It goes without saying that it's tax time, and if you're wondering what to do with your tax refund, I might have some ideas for you. If you're eagerly anticipating a tax refund in the coming weeks, you have good reason to be optimistic. The IRS reports that about 77% of tax returns filed last year generated a refund, and the average refund, check this out, was $2,800. And even though what can feel like a gift from the government is really a delayed receipt of your own money, the best use of those funds is not always apparent. This year, the question is even more fraught, with many households facing increasing financial pressures from inflation, rising interest rates, and expiring government assistance programs tied to the pandemic. Advanced child tax credits, for example, which offered families monthly checks based on their income and number of dependents, has ended pending further congressional action. I've got a roadmap for you today to help you decide what to do. First, save for the next emergency. First, think about your near-term security. That, according to Vince Shorb, he's the CEO of the Las Vegas-based National Financial Educators Council, and it supports financial wellness educators. He says there is a lot of things going on, from COVID to inflation, and he says he wants to make sure people have food on the table and gas to get to work in the event of an emergency like job loss or unexpected expenses. Unload high-interest debt. With interest rates wildly expected to rise this year, credit card and other variable debt would likely become more expensive, which makes using refund money to pay for it a smart move. That, according to Mike Biggia, a CFP in San Francisco, he suggests paying off any debt that carries an interest rate of 6% or higher, and also focusing on student loans, medical debt, and anything else that carries a variable rate. They also say make room for other goals. If you've already have your emergency fund set up and high interest rate debt addressed, Vickia suggests putting the refund cash in high yield online savings accounts dedicated to different goals, such as vacation or even retirement. When it's not in your checking account, it's harder to get to and gives you a pause before you get the money. Increasing your contributions to existing retirement accounts, such as a 401k, is another solid option, Biggia says. And after taking care of emergencies, splurge within limits. After taking care of emergency savings and debt payments, there might not be enough left for the refund to make a huge purchase, such as a car. But Scott Allen Turner, a CFP in Aledo, Texas, suggests squeezing in some enjoyable things, too. He says go out and celebrate and entertain. He says perhaps even a nice steak dinner, new designer jeans, or concert tickets could be the ticket. I'm Freddie Bell, helping you to come up with some ideas on what to do with your tax refund. And this is New Beginnings.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference, available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Michael Osterholm is an epidemiologist. He's also the region's professor and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. As you know, Michael Osterholm was named to the newly elected President Biden's COVID-19 advisory board. He joins us now this morning. Mike, welcome to the show. Glad you're back with us.
Thanks, Freddie. It's always good to be with you. Thank you.
My goodness. The president, as you know, laid out his COVID plan shortly afterwards. You mentioned that your team had created a more than 90-page report that buttressed what the president had to say. What is your report saying, and what are the highlights of that report that you presented?
Well, Freddie, first of all, you know, I could almost take words right from your, or you said today's words, empathy. Seek first to understand.
Yes.
And you know what? And I think that was exactly what the report was about, saying we still have a lot to learn about this virus. Number one is, you know, we have to understand, you know, why people do and don't get vaccinated. Right now, you know, over the weekend, we had a report released that basically spoke to the issue that during the Omicron wave, black adults were four times as likely to be hospitalized compared with white adults during the same time period. And one of the reasons was is that black adults had only been vaccinated compared to white adults. 39% of blacks were vaccinated at that time, and 43% had received a booster dose, where among whites it was 47% had been received their first dose, and 54% had received a booster dose. So we have to understand what are the barriers there, and what this report really tried to lay out is how do we get through the next year? What are the things that we need to understand to really try to bring this ongoing challenge under better control? How do we do better testing and treating? You know, one of the things that if we could get people rapidly tested and then get them to these drugs, they could be very successful in reducing the risk of serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths. We talked a lot about in our report about how can we improve building ventilation? How can we do a better job of providing protective equipment to people, particularly frontline workers, where, again, we know that the communities of color have been particularly hard hit with being there day in and day out on those jobs that were so critical to keeping everything moving forward. So this report, I think, really laid out just the questions that we really hadn't taken time to ask yet, but that we need to do.
You're a researcher, and it's interesting. I posed this question last week to another epidemiologist. With all the emphasis and all the money that is going into states all around the country, in this report that you just cited, 99 counties, 14 states, why is it when the vaccines are free, why is it when the testing is free that people of color still lag behind getting the vaccines needed to keep them alive?
Well, you know, Freddie, this is one point that I think all of us in the business would do very well to have a very, very large dose of humility and to acknowledge we don't know a lot of these reasons why. You know, I have to tell you, I think that it's not a matter of it won't happen. For example, I have the real gift in my life of working closely with Stephen Thomas, one of the leading black health researchers in the world at the University of Maryland. Mm-hmm. And I think we've talked about this before. You know, Dr. Thomas has actually started an incredible program, the Barbers and Beauticians Program, where they educate black barbers and beauticians throughout large areas of Maryland and now spreading out in other areas to actually just talk to their clients. You know, they got them there in the chair, and they talked about all kinds of health things, and the barbers and the beauticians are well informed, have lots of current information, whether it's blood pressure, you know, getting your prostate checked, breast cancer for women, and COVID. And you know what they found? They have substantially increased the vaccination rates. It just took that kind of outreach to give people better information they could trust from trusted sources. So I think this is where we have to be a lot more creative. I don't see this as a line between, you know, which you will get vaccinated, you won't. I think it's, well, give people better information from trusted sources, and I think we can do a lot better. And so I learn a lot from people like Stephen Thomas every day about how we need to reach out and how we need to continue to work on this because, as you know, COVID's not going away.
No, as a matter of fact, I heard Dr. Anthony Fauci yesterday talking about a lull in COVID-19. He says, but this is not yet a time to declare a victory over the pandemic. Yeah. I'll ask you this way. Is the COVID blizzard, as you've characterized it, is it over?
Well, I think the blizzard is over. But, you know, like any good Minnesota snow record, you know, you can have a blizzard and then you have a follow-up storm, you know, 48 hours later. And what we're seeing happen right now is a new variant among Omicron. Omicron has kind of split itself into several different subvariants, and one called BA2 is much more infectious than is BA1, the original one, and that one was bad enough. And with BA2 right now, we're seeing a big increase in cases throughout parts of Europe. And oftentimes that has been, the look forward to see what it might do in the United States kind of situation. And what we often see is that what happens in Europe eventually happens here within weeks to months. And so we're surely on the lookout. We do have a way of looking in communities for activity that has been really very helpful and very novel, and that's looking at wastewater surveillance. Mm-hmm. So when someone is infected with the virus, they shed it in their stool, it goes into the sewer systems, and we can actually monitor that, the level. And we have seen big increases in a number of sites around the U.S. in the last week. And often this predates the clinical cases presenting for medical care and hospitalizations by 1 to 3 weeks. And so, we could be sitting on another surge. I don't think it'll be anywhere as big as what we saw in January, but it's nonetheless, it still could be a challenge. That's why it's still not too late to get your vaccines. Get your vaccines.
Epidemiologist Michael Osterholm with us this morning. As a general statement with regard to waning immunity, a question. So we've seen where we're hearing about Moderna, we're hearing about Pfizer getting a fourth shot or a third shot if it's J&J. Regardless of underlying health conditions and age, should this be the norm that we go ahead and get the third shot or get the fourth shot respectively?
Freddie, again, this is one of those areas where we're learning a lot. I would say right now, clearly if you're immunocompromised, you need the fourth dose. No question about it. You need a third dose if you had two with the J&J. For those over 65, which is the application that's been put forward by both Pfizer and Moderna to give them a fourth dose, I think that's likely to be approved based on initial data we have from Israel. But beyond that, I think it's still too early to tell, what kind of residual protection we'll get. We do know that these vaccines have been highly successful. And even if you have a breakthrough infection with waning immunity where you become clinically ill, there is still a significant reduction in hospitalization, severe illness, and deaths. So, that's still a heck of a bargain to get with a vaccine, is to avoid serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths.
Can you tell us about what you see as the texture of our new normal as we try to push through all of these variants, through pushing through, making sure people are vaccinated and tested and so forth? What does it look like for us?
Well, this again, nobody's going to listen to me anymore because they think I don't know anything. Some would probably be a little right. But the bottom line is that we just don't know what these variants are going to do. They come out of nowhere. And will they evade the immune protection of our already existing vaccines? Will you, if you've been previously infected and develop immunity, still be protected against these new variants? And that's the challenge we have right now. I don't expect to see this become, month after month, year after year, huge surges of cases with lots of deaths. But it's really just too early to say. And I think that anybody that tells you exactly what they know is going to happen in the next year, be careful because they probably have a bridge to sell you to.
Do you have a final thought for our Twin Cities audience? We really respect
your
work.
No, I appreciate the opportunity here. I appreciate all the messaging you get out. It's really important. We need to have a clear and concise message to the community by someone very trusted in the community. And I so appreciate, being on with you and allowing me to share the time with you, because your message is really important, Freddie. It's very important.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words. And we thank you and we appreciate your expertise. Thanks for being with us.
Okay. Talk to you later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Thank you so much for being with us this weekend on New Beginnings. Right now it's really difficult to talk to anybody who's not under some level of stress. Dr. Jessie Gold, a psychiatrist at Washington University in St. Louis, knows she's edging toward burnout when she wakes up, feels instantly angry at her email inbox, and doesn't want to get out of bed. It's perhaps not surprising that a mental health professional who is trying to stem the rising tide of burnout could burn out sometimes too. After all, the phenomenon has practically become ubiquitous in our culture. In a 2021 survey of 1,500 U.S. workers, more than half said they were feeling burned out as a result of their job demands, and a whopping 4.3 million Americans quit their jobs in December in what has become as known as the Great Resignation. When people think of burnout, mental and emotional symptoms such as feelings of helplessness and cynicism often come to mind. But burnout can lead to a physical symptom as well, and experts say it can be wise to look out for the signs and take steps when you notice them. Burnout, as it is defined, is not a medical condition. It's a manifestation of chronic, unmitigated stress. That, according to Dr. Lott Dyerby, a physician scientist who studies burnout at Mayo Clinic. The World Health Organization describes burnout as a workplace phenomenon characterized by feelings of exhaustion, cynicism, and reduced efficacy. You start by not functioning as well. You're missing deadlines. You're frustrated. You're maybe irritable with your colleagues, says Jeanette Bennett. She's a researcher who studies the effects of stress on health at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. But stress can have wear and tear effects on the body, especially when it doesn't ease up after a while. So it makes sense that it can incite physical symptoms too, Bennett says. When people are under stress, their bodies undergo changes that include making higher than normal levels of stress hormones such as cortisol, adrenaline, and epinephrine. These changes are helpful in the short term. They give us the energy to power through difficult situations, but over time, they start harming the body. Our bodies were not designed for the kinds of stressors that we're facing today, says Christina Maslach, who is a social psychologist at the University of California, Berkeley, who has spent her career studying burnout. She says these are the ways to recognize burnout in our bodies and what we can do about it. She says one common burnout symptom is insomnia. When researchers in Italy surveyed frontline healthcare workers with burnout during the first peak of the pandemic, they found that 55% reported having difficulty falling asleep, with nearly 40% having nightmares. Research indicates that chronic stress interferes with the complicated neurological and hormonal systems that regulate sleep. It's a vicious cycle because not sleeping throws this system even more out of whack. If we've noticed that we're not able to sleep at night, that could be a sign that we are experiencing burnout, and our sleeplessness could exacerbate the problem. Physical exhaustion is another common sign. Gold says that one of her key symptoms of burnout was fatigue. She says she realized that she was sleeping every day after work, and she was wondering what was wrong with her when actually it was burnout. Changes in eating habits. Either eating more or less than usual can also be a sign of burnout. In a study of Italian healthcare workers, 56% reported changes in food habits. People might eat less because they're too busy or distracted, or they might find themselves craving those comfort foods that we all like to go to when we need something to make us feel better, Bennett says. What to do? Well, if you're experiencing physical symptoms that could be indicative of burnout, consider seeing your primary care doctor or a mental health professional to determine whether they're rooted in other physical conditions. Don't just ignore the symptoms and assume they don't matter. Dr. Gold says it's really easy to blow off our own symptoms, especially in our culture where we're taught to work hard. If it is burnout, then the best solution is to address the root of the problem. Burnout is typically recognized when it is job-driven, but chronic stress can have a variety of causes, financial problems, relationship woes, caregiving burdens, among other things. Think about the pebbles in your shoe all the time that you have to deal with, Maslach says, and brainstorm ways to remove some of them, at least some of the time. Perhaps you can ask your partner to help more with your toddler's bedtime routine, or get takeout, or make simple sandwiches when you're especially busy so you don't have to plan dinner as well. Despite popular culture coverage of the issue, burnout can't be fixed with better self-care, Maslach says. In fact, this implication only worsens the problem because he says it lays the blame and responsibility on those with burnout and implies that they should do more to feel better, which is not the case. However, some lifestyle choices can make burnout less likely. Social support, for instance, can help, Gold says. This could include talking to a therapist or meeting with friends. It may also help to take advantage of mental health or exercise benefits offered by your employer. Sleeping can be helpful, too. So if you're suffering from insomnia, talk to a doctor about possible treatments, Bennett says. And finally, while you may not want to add more to your plate, try to make a bit of your time each day for something you love. Dr. Diaby says her work has found that surgeons who make time for hobbies and recreation, even just 15 to 20 minutes a day, are less likely to experience burnout than surgeons who don't. She says you have to have something outside of work that helps you de-stress, that helps you to focus, and helps you to relax. Remember, it's really easy to blow off your own symptoms, especially in our culture where we're taught to work hard. I'm Freddie Bell talking about stress, and this is New Beginnings. In our never-ending effort to find valuable information and insight in all areas, it's time to bring in Cassie Crandall with this week's Three Things.
Thank you, Freddie. For my first thing this week, I'm going to start out with a phrase that I love from a TV show that I absolutely loved called Breaking Bad. I'm sure that many of you out there watched this show and liked it as much as I did. I've rewatched it so many times that my family thinks I'm crazy, but that's okay because I love it and it makes me happy. The quote that I'm referring to is by the character Mike, probably my favorite character in the show, but he talks about no half measures. I chose a half measure when I should have gone all the way. I'll never make that mistake again. Now, I'm not referring to no half measures in the same context that Mike was, but to me, no half measures is don't do a halfway job on what you should do a all the way job on. Don't go halfway. Don't go half-heartedly into a relationship, a job, setting out to clean the house. If you're going to do it, make an effort to do it right, even if it takes longer. Take care of it. I see it all the time. Folks are taking half measures in their jobs, in their schoolwork. It's easier to go about things half-heartedly and not really care than to do it the right way. What if we did it the right way the first time and then we didn't have to do it over again? I think that's the way to go about it. That's how I try to live my life. Sure, I've made mistakes, but I like to think that I've learned from those mistakes and I go forward with a better attitude. And I know that if I can't do all of something right away, it's okay. I can do one thing at a time. Baby steps and no half measures. My second thing this week, a friend of mine has an RV and she and her family love to go RVing. They've traveled to many places in the United States, and they absolutely love that lifestyle, and they're having a great time with it. Well, until the gas prices went up, and that changed their travel plans this year a lot. They were disappointed at first, but then they decided that it would cost them less to go on a shorter road trip in their car, which gets better gas mileage. And with paying for hotels, et cetera, they would actually spend less money than if they were to fill up their RV with gas and travel in it. So what I'm saying is, look at the options. You don't have to necessarily cancel your vacation. You could modify your vacation. Try a staycation. I'm embarrassed to say that I lived in Arizona for 17 years and never saw the Grand Canyon. Now, how many of us don't know the state that we live in? There's so much to explore, so many things to do inside and outside. So think about that. Staycation, modification, you can do it. Still have fun, despite inflation and high gas prices. Last but certainly not least, my third thing for this week is a quote from Theodore Seuss Geisel, otherwise known as Dr. Seuss. It's from his book, Oh, the Places You'll Go. You're off to great places. Today is your day. Your mountain is waiting. So get on your way. That's right, folks. Get on your way. Have a great week. I'll see you next week. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference, available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Now let's turn our attention to your financial health in retirement. And with us is Leibel Sternbach. He is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. You can read his writings literally everywhere. We've been talking about the difference between a financial advisor, and don't laugh, Leibel, between a financial advisor and a financial advisor. As we were stepping away, we talked about a commission-based advisor and a fee-based advisor. Is there really a difference between the two, sir?
So there is a difference in how they are paid. That may not reflect the advice they give or the quality of the advice, but it is reflected in how they are paid. So when we were talking about, you know, commission advisors, whether they're stockbrokers or they work for a broker dealer and they get paid on the sale of a security or a mutual fund. And then we talked about the insurance side where you've got commission insurance agents who get paid a commission on products. You also then have the whole fee side, and you have fee-based and fee-only, which is very confusing. But essentially what it is you've got people who get paid a fee usually based on the assets that they're managing. And so that is very prevalent in the registered investment advisor space and the people who generally call themselves fiduciary advisors. And the way that fee works is, and most people are familiar with it, you know, if your advisor is managing $100,000, they may charge you 1% of the assets that they're managing, and that will be your management fee. And the idea is that as they do well for you, their fee will increase. And if they don't do well for you, the fee will decrease. And hopefully what that means is that the advisor's interest is in line with your interests, which if you just think about that for a second, if a financial advisor gets paid more when your assets grow, then they would want your assets to grow, which makes sense if the financial advisor you're hiring is purely for investments. So if I'm hiring someone who they say, I've got a great stock strategy and I outperform the market, right? That structure makes a lot of sense for somebody like that, right? Because I want them to outperform the market. If they don't outperform the market, they're not going to make as much money. Does it really incentivize them to outperform the market? Not really, because the truth is that it's kind of hard to move your money from advisor to advisor. So they may underperform the market, but they're not going to underperform it that much. On the flip side, it also creates this weird incentive for the advisor that they constantly have to create performance. Because if they're not growing your money, then you're going to be asking, why am I paying all this money when I could just put it in an S&P 500, an ETF, a mutual fund, and either pay a commission once or pay no commissions and get similar performance. So the question becomes, what am I getting for that value? And the typical answer that advisors will give you, and I work with amazing advisors who do this, and so I do not want to take away at all from the fact that you've got amazing advisors, and this is just the fee structure that's set up. But what they do is they provide retirement planning, tax planning, all these financial planning services in addition to their investment advice. And the way that they're getting paid is through the investment management. They're not charging you for the financial planning side of it. But what you're really coming to them for is financial planning, and you're getting charged for investment management. And it's created this weird incentive dynamic, which is what the industry is currently set up as. There is a group of advisors who are kind of questioning this. And they're saying, well, it doesn't really make sense that, you know, if the market is, you can't really outperform the market anymore by being an active manager, at least in developed markets. It's very hard to do that. So if I'm not able to pick the best stock for you and perform better, and if you would probably be better off just investing in the S&P 500 and us managing your asset allocation, maybe managing how and when you take money out of your funds to fund your retirement or whatever it is you do, and the real value I provide is on planning, then let me just charge you a planning fee. And that's what these fee-only advisors are. Some of them only charge financial planning fees that are hourly. Some of them will only charge on the investment management, but they don't do in commission-based, right? So where you're adding in an insurance product, so they drop the insurance product because there's a bias over there, and they'll refer you to like a low-load insurance advisor. So that's an insurance advisor who sells products. They don't necessarily get paid a commission, or they sell products that have very low commissions on them, so they don't have as much of an incentive on that. And their main focus is on the financial planning side, which I think is, you know, kind of where the industry is going. But I think at the same time, it creates this weird disincentive for retirees. Retirees, when we get into retirement, every penny counts. And our goal isn't to outperform the market. Our goal is to not lose money, right? That is our number one goal. We need to protect that base. And it takes, you know, it's... Especially as we get older, and it means a lot more to us, and our ability to recover from those losses is, you know, gets shorter and shorter. And it means more to us when our portfolio drops 30%, because that could literally mean the difference between, you know, us, you know, penny pinching and eating cat food versus, you know, being able to eat out. That really makes it hard. And so as a financial advisor, your job goes up dramatically in retirement with a retiree as they get older, because you need to help hold their hands and, you know, be the shoulder to cry on and help them, you know, navigate this world that doesn't come with a handbook, right? It's not laid out for us. Exactly. And so to incentivize them and to pay them with what is essentially a decreasing asset, right? Like we plan on spending our money down, and the vast majority of Americans do not have enough money saved to in retirement. So not only are we not going to have a lot of money for you to charge on, but we're going to be spending it down as we get older. It kind of, you know, You're incentivizing the wrong type of advisors with that structure. And unfortunately, this is how the industry is set up. The industry is trying to change, but the advisors, it creates a very weird incentive structure for advisors. So it's critically important that when you're working with an advisor, especially as you get older, and as the older you get, the more important this gets, mm-hmm. you want it in writing. You want to know what is the services they're going to provide you? How do they get paid? And you want to know that they're going to put your interests first, above their interests, above their economic interests first and always. And it may mean at some point having a minimum fee. It may mean at some point paying more in fees than you would when you're younger. And it's easier. It's like, oh, just invest in the market and, you know, we'll have 5 years in cash. Well, yeah, you know, you hit 75 and you don't have the ability to have 5 years in cash, and you have to, you know, figure out how to save the money when the market has just, you know, tanked. You got to worry about those things.
You're telling me two things. One, I don't want to be a financial advisor when I grow up. And two, the job of an advisor, credible or not, it's really, really difficult. And it really takes a caring person who understands the market and understands and has a really deep knowledge of the products and services that they're offering. Which leads me to a question I mentioned before, and we only have about 5 minutes, Libel, so I'll be brief in my question. So Penny is asking, and she wrote in, she says, I'm 62, married, and we have a decent amount of retirement savings in our 401ks and our IRAs. As our retirement nears, she says she's concerned about how to go about setting up withdrawals and how to budget for savings. She's also considering hiring a financial advisor, Libel, to set up a plan, but she's worried. She's worried about being taken advantage of with fees and bad advice. I think you've explained this, but how would you answer Penny today on that question?
Well, we got 4 minutes left, right? So, Penny, The answer to your question is you're thinking the right way. As you're thinking about those withdrawals and as you're taking that money out of retirement, timing when you take that money out of your investments is critically important. I want you to Google something. It's called sequence risk. This is probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks for retirees, because if you are just automatically taking money out of your investments, then you are going to take money out when the market is down. And if you take money out when the market is down, you're going to compound your losses. That 10% correction that the market has, you know, on average every 18 months, that is now going to become, you know, a 12% or a 15% loss for you. And you're going to be locking in those losses. Whereas everyone else gets to ride the recovery because they still have that security. They still own it. So, okay, the price dropped by 15%, but then it recovered. You aren't going to have that security to recover from. You're not going to have that price increase. So now your portfolio has decreased and in its ability to grow over the rest of your life has decreased as well. And that's where the real hurt comes in. So when you're looking for a financial advisor, look up the fiduciary oath, Google it there. The CFP board has a good fiduciary oath out there. There's a few institutes out there. If you look on my website, I got links to them. That's yieldsforyou.com/resources. You want your financial advisor to take a fiduciary oath, and you want it in writing. You want to know that how they're getting paid. You want to know that they're going to put your interest first, and you want to know what their biases are. The next question becomes, do you need a financial advisor to just help you set up the plan and check in regularly, or do you want somebody managing and holding your hand on a regular basis? That is a question that only you can answer. The costs will change over time. It may be cheaper or more expensive for you to hire an advisor up front and then pay them hourly as you get older, or it may be the reverse. But either way, you want to be asking those hard questions of your financial advisor, and you want to make sure no matter what, whatever plan you have, it protects your physical and emotional needs. You need to at all times feel like your essentials are taken care of, that you will always have a roof over your head, food on the table, and those essential needs that make you feel like a human being, that those are protected and will never be at risk. Because the second that you feel that your essentials are at risk is when you start making bad financial decisions. And the primary job of a financial advisor, more than making you money, more than saving you on taxes, more than all of that, is the helping you navigate that emotional uncertainty and figuring out what it takes for you to feel safe, and then figuring out the technicalities of making that happen and protecting you.
Really difficult, Tim, but it's really interesting when you think about it, because it seems as if it's a study just in human nature. I think we have a radar system built into us that helps us to detect those who are really not for us. If there was one thing, and we're just about out of time, seriously, under about a minute, is there one thing that you can share with us before we have to step away, Libel, that we should always remember?
Yes. If there's one thing that I leave you with, it is you need to make sure that you understand your needs, you understand why and how your advisor can help you, and you feel in your gut and you have confidence in it that your advisor will be there for you when you need them the most and they can take care of you. Because if you don't have that faith, if you are trying to overcome those red flags that you have in your mind that are telling you something's wrong here, and you're just looking at the checklist, you will be set up for failure. You will be setting yourself up for failure. You will be turning in bed at night. So trust that gut instinct of yours, of the advisor that you choose or the plan that you choose, and follow it. Because we as human beings are really good at detecting when somebody is leading us astray. And right. Trust those instincts.
Thank you, Libel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Libel's website is libelonfire.com. That's libelonfire.com. And more new beginnings is straight ahead.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day,
Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference, available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
Save your time and skip the trip. If you have an unused at-home COVID-19 saliva test kit, use it now if you feel sick and save a trip to an in-person testing site. A message from the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. It happened this week. Several countries in Europe where COVID-19 cases are rising should have taken a more measured approach to lifting pandemic restrictions. That, according to Dr. Hans Kluge of the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Europe, Britain, Germany, France, and Italy are among the 18 European countries where cases are increasing thanks to the Omicron subvariant BA2, which is highly transmissible. A tornado that touched down in New Orleans on Tuesday night caused extensive damage, and first responders are searching for residents who might be under the rubble of their homes. The tornado hit the St. Bernard Parish and Lower Ninth Ward, two communities that experienced heavy destruction during Hurricane Katrina, and at least one person was killed in that parish. Thousands of residents across the New Orleans region are without power. Four Ukrainian children with cancer are now receiving medical care at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis. After Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th, the young patients could no longer receive their cancer treatments. So the children, who are between the ages of 9 months and 9 years old, were first evacuated to Poland with members of their immediate family before being airlifted to the United States. And we learned earlier this week that Hillary Clinton has tested positive COVID-19. The former Secretary of State and presidential nominee says she tested positive and she had some mild symptoms, but she's feeling fine. She says she's more grateful than ever for the protection vaccines can provide against serious illness. She says please get vaccinated and boosted if you haven't already. Former President Bill Clinton tested negative for the virus, and he says he's feeling fine. And Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson says she doesn't believe children should be shamed because of their race. That was after Senator Ted Cruz from Texas confronted Jackson about her position on the board of a progressive private school. I'm Freddie Bell, and it happened this week, and this is New Beginnings. Hi again, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. And with me right now is our career expert. He is Mr. Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects. They have the ability to turn candidates into contenders. Joe McKenzie, good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Freddie Bell. How are you today?
Unbelievable. For those who like to reach out to you, how can they find Joe McKenzie?
They can find me on the web, and that's rippleconnects.com. I share some job search resources on there, as well as some of the services we offer. But I am a stickler for returning calls. So if someone would leave me a message at 763-438-1621, I will certainly reach out and acknowledge their call and see how I can be of service to them.
Well, I know that we were talking today about career stories, and I'm just curious, you know, with career stories, how do you incorporate who you are through a story when you're talking about building out your job search, Joe?
Well, I've kind of learned this from my own firsthand experience that, yeah, my resume says where I was, for how long, what I did, what responsibilities I had, which company, et cetera, et cetera. But I found myself integrating why I made a change from that organization, what experiences was I leaving to experience something else. There's creative ways to integrate your story, and that could be, first and foremost, talking to others. Our bench of career advocates should know our story, the stories that define us. That's a no-brainer in my book, because those bench of career advocates are wanting to champion, wanting to help us, right?
That's right.
But we could also integrate our career story into the interviewing process, the hiring process. why are we making a change at this point? What experience has led us to this point where we want to do something different? And those stories, if they're used in the right setting, kind of humanize us. They share our experiences and they go above and beyond our resume because, yes, I was at this company for so long and then this company, but those experiences are what humanize a job seeker. We were able to talk about the experiences that have shaped us, Freddie Bell. And I think that helps us stand out because people are trying to find someone that's going to be a good fit for an organization. And maybe it's those stories, that humanizing factor at certain points of the job search process that we can integrate them into.
We're talking with Joe McKenzie this weekend. We're talking about your career story. And Joe just told us that it's important to weave in our career story going from the pages of a resume into a conversation with a potential employer. So how do you decide which stories that you're going to build out or which stories that you would even include in a conversation with someone who doesn't even know you?
Well, the stories that define us, our experiences, should be the ones that have some continuity to us. So if you're making a change over several years leading up to this type of job, those are the types of stories you want to integrate. So in my case, I was always working towards being a nonprofit leader. And so I'll intertwine those into some of my activities, volunteer with a nonprofit or working in programming for a nonprofit, all ultimately leading to where I wanted to go. That was my individual career story that I was able to talk to my bench of career advocates. I incorporated that into some of the interviewing on why I was moving away from that, the office equipment sector to the nonprofit. That defining or those experiences that I had, that continuity I think is important. It can't just be a one-off, hey, I want to make a change because of this. It has to help define who you are, Freddie. And those are the stories I would lean into. And you want to make sure that they're positive and they relate to what the employer is looking for. And we don't always know what the employer is looking for, but certainly using our own career story gives them better insight of who they have across the table from them. And so if it's even some of the culture questions on an organization's culture and who's going to work well within this culture, sometimes your career stories allow that broadened insight of who you are as a person because of your experiences. And that's helpful to the employer to see who they have in front of them.
So it sounds like it's not a good idea to wing it or just to say, well, I'm trying to get this opportunity because I'm tired of working at this other place and I'm trying to ratchet up my career. That doesn't cut it, Joe McKenzie?
No, it doesn't. You have to be able to walk the walk or back that up. And that's why I think you have to look at that story or that path you took and combine those experiences to ultimately share why you're here at this point. Those are the most impactful stories. But if they're just short term, hey, I'm not happy, I want to, that's not gonna cut it. But what have you been working towards? What are those experiences that helped shape you? Some of the challenges that you had, some of the successes, and how you went above and beyond those successes, and you wrap those into a story about who you are, complements your resume, because your resume obviously is going to have, you know, some of your quantifiable accomplishments. But I think humans hire humans and they want to know what type of human, what do you bring to the table? And I think those career stories and experiences can help that case. So do you agree with that in regards to, you know, when you've hired or been in the process of, you know, looking to make a change, has it helped you?
Well, you know, I'm in the business of telling stories, Joe McKenzie. I'm a broadcaster. So stories, that's my way of life. I can already tell that our listeners are trying to figure out how to write their stories or probably already doing it. So can you just outline quickly the 3 points that we want to remember in developing our career story?
You want to make sure you're building upon a series of how you overcome challenges, how your experiences shaped you, and what you learned about yourself. And if you can add some years to that and make that your story, that is a very compelling piece. And I think those are the three areas. You think about how that experience shaped you, how you overcame challenges, and just overall, you know, what have you learned about yourself? I'm a completely different professional than I was 20 years ago. Well, that can tie into that story, Freddie, how you've evolved, your emotional intelligence and your team approach. Those are all things that, you know, we're all a work in progress. And I think an employer knowing that you're always working towards something bigger and better and getting more efficient at it, I think that's the humanizing factor that employers are looking for.
So, all right, Joe McKenzie, we got to leave it right there. You do some fine work at Ripple Connect, sir.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
Here are today's words to the wise. Learning is never a waste of time. Today's wise words read, learning is never a waste of time. Well, that's our show this week. Special thanks to Dr. Michael Osterholm for stopping by. You know, he's our resident epidemiologist, I like to call him. Also, Joe McKenzie with his career information. And a special hello and thank you to Cassie Crandall giving us lifestyle updates. And of course, we say thanks to you for spending your time with us each week. It's a point at listening each week at this time on your favorite radio station. It's a joy bringing you information from around the world and in our own communities, all designed to help you to have a second chance at a new beginning. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for making us a part of your week. We'll see you next time right here.